thanks to whoever for their successful reign.
Thanks to whoever, Chip.
Private, very, very secure area.
Hmm. Are we talking like satanic rituals, these type of...
You know, there are some in, if people get Jupiter Island and look up the rock formations that are out there, they'll find very interesting. I won't go into that, but they use those rock formations for many things, yes.
And where is Jupiter Island exactly?
It's on the on the east coast of Florida.
Okay. Listen, Chip, thank you
so much. South
for,
of Cape
sharing.
Canaveral and north of south of Cape Canaveral and north of Miami.
I hope it's okay if I can just keep pumping questions here because I've been wanting to ask you for a long time. Are you up for it?
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay.
You can always say no, Chip, if you want to, do you know?
Yeah, of course.
I know. Well, he's a good friend. Yeah.
I've studied a lot assassinations, and the more I get into this area, I mean, we're talking decades now, the more I get connected or I get into the world of so-called serial killers as well. And also the whole rock scene in the early 1960s going upwards. And it seems like many of these major serial killers, at least the ones that we're being told are the one responsible for this, have gone through a very similar childhood, very molested and awful childhood, and been growing up very close to Navy or military bases. Is this something that you know about? I'm talking MK Ultra, and that many of them, I would say more or less everyone I've looked into have been growing up very closely to military bases.
The Navy military base aspect of MK Ultra and mind control doesn't ring a lot with me. A lot of what we dealt with and flying people back and forth was over to the Los Alamos area, and also into Springfield, the federal prison over there, where they would work with these people.
We're talking MK Ultra now.
We're talking mind control. MK Ultra left years ago, but yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How... this is always a question that I've I keep being asked it, and I'm not sure how advanced is mind control at this point.
Oh, you know, Ollie, I have no idea, but it was pretty. You know, we had to use drugs to control people back in my days. Up then, that was up through 1992. But I'll tell you, there's nothing better than this stuff. Now they talk about electronic mind control and means to electronically stimulate the brain. And, you know, I have to believe that the brain can be electronically stimulated. It has electrical impulses, and there's no reason why it can't be. I mean, we were flying these people into Los Alamos to the laboratories there for a reason. We were flying them into these famous doctors in Springfield for a reason, and... whether it was for implants or whether it was testing, I don't know, but it has, and that was, 92 to now is 22 years ago. So it has to, with technology, have gained momentum hugely and be something that is very, very advanced.
Yeah.
It would seem to be very, very advanced back then, Chip, to be honest. I mean, that's quite incredible, the drug you were using. And I need to ask you, we're quite a solutions-based radio station. We try our best to sort of look, seek, and maybe offer solutions about certain situations. But this is just massive. This is the full military matrix domination of the planet via the big superpowers. And you know, you were basically involved with it and in it. Do you have any sort of, like you said earlier in the chat, you know, people listen to this information and they just sit on the sofa and go, yeah, okay, right. Well, what can we do? What can an individual, what can a group, what can we do to take the power away from these, what I think are just psychopathic demons who are running our planet?
Do you, Look, there's just as psychopathic were leaders in some of these other countries that were taken out by riots in the street. It won't be a friendly takeover, whatever it is, because they're not going to just sit down, not as long as they have people like me working for them to do their deeds. And I'm probably a Boy Scout compared to what they've got now.
Sure. Sure, and obviously as the veils are being lifted, and they really are, you know, the truth is coming out on so many individuals, so many groups of individuals as well. It looks like that, you know, what does a cornered rat do? It comes out fighting. It goes for the jugular.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to genocide whole communities. The Ebola thing, the disease is real. The one thing we have to look at is who stands to benefit by this. You've got the vaccinations, you know, the manufacturers of this. But more than that, you have complete control and you have complete martial law that can be thrown into place, in several countries. Complete control over everything that's said and done, because in promoting fear in man, they tend to acquiesce and settle in and put all their trust into that which is going to have a solution. And if they try to say, we have the solution, look, here's this huge outbreak, we have the solution, trust in us, that may be the way that things are going to be going in the future. I don't know. I do know this. I do know that if they throw Ebola into South American or into Mexico, South American or Central American country, those people will flee from those countries because of the health care, and they'll come to the borders of the United States and cause even more panic. So there's all kinds of panic they can do, and it's not only with Ebola. It can be with finances. If you don't have money to buy bread or to put bread on your table, what's going to happen? There are so many different arenas they can go into once they have everything in place that they want in place, whoever it is, whatever it is. The one thing people have to do is just not sit and listen. You have to at some point stand up, take a stand, and be willing to either go to prison or something for what you really believe in.
Absolutely.
And that's, unfortunately, that's probably what it's going to come down to. Here in the United States, they've built many fusion centers, and they've built more caskets, and they have them piled up all over the place.
Yeah, so is that a reality? Is that a reality? I mean, you know, I'm stuck here in Ireland, and obviously the internet is a sort of an opening out to the world, but so much disinformation is out there. Are these FEMA camps and all these caskets ready for the civilians of America if such an outbreak breaks out, or is it that they are going to just kill people, depopulate?
We had huge base closures in the United States. People can look it up. And with those base closures, what they've done is they've turned it over to private corporations and private prison systems and private security systems, a lot of them. They have built large buildings, large centers, and they're covered with barbed wire, and they're manned by minimum manning. They have housing within there. They're stocked. So yeah, the fusion centers are real. The prisons, which can be used in the future, are real. The caskets, those, you can take photos of those. Outside of Atlanta, outside of these large distribution points, there's thousands of them sitting, waiting. Whether genocide's gonna take place, I don't know, but to get enough fear in people, it probably needs to take place. And if it's collateral damage, what did I say earlier about their feeling about collateral damage?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, it doesn't bode well for the future. So really, globally, we need to find out our individual sovereignty and not recognize these despots and these military organizations. People who have been brainwashed into working for them all their lives and all the rest of it. And oh, isn't it great? Look, our boys out there doing a job for us, when in fact they're just drug running and killers and terrorists themselves. Whether they like it or not, that's what they're doing. I mean, I've got an 11-year-old daughter, Chip, and when she was about 8 years old, I remember her turning around to me and saying, I don't really understand what's going on. Surely if an army goes into another country and starts a war, they're not freedom fighters for their land. They're terrorists taking over another one.
Yes, they are. America is the largest terrorist. The American military is the largest terrorist entity in the world, and it's used under the disguise of democracy. I just can't believe that everyone sits back and lets that happen.
It's incredible. It really is. You know, I think there's coming the day when we're not going to let that happen here in Ireland. And, you know, we're being medicated in our water. We're being dumbed down in our education systems. Again, follow the money, and it is Rockefeller Foundation and all that type of stuff that, that supports our universities and our education system. So we're basically under, under the systems that are already controlling massive other parts of the world, and we've really seen it here in Ireland over our history in the last few hundred years.
And the more Ireland looks for sovereignty, the more under siege they'll become.
Quite possibly, Chip. That is the biggest, I suppose, fear again. That, you know, when we stand up, they'll be bombing mainland Britain and saying the IRA are back, when really it's just us trying to stand up for our rights here in Ireland.
Exactly. Yeah. Sean who?
I'm sure. Tell you what, I'm a very simple poet. Would you like to hear a poem?
Yay.
Because I've got one that sort of fits the bill, okay, Chip? You might not be into poetry, but I'm, as I said, I'm a simple poet, and it's a simple poem. Would you like to hear it?
I hope it's better than the punk rock. Let's go.
Hey, I'm an old punk rocker. What can I do? Okay, this is actually called Warlords Sip Their Tea in Error. And it goes like this. The war on terror goes on forever, when it should be never. While warlords sip their tea in error, feeding us their nightmare dreams, allows them to continue with their money-making schemes. Schemes, scams, Iraq, Iran, peacekeeping troops in Afghanistan, innocent civilians being killed every day. They have no rights. They have no say. Children being born with unbelievable mutations, the result of any nation with radiation contamination. Let the world know what is really going on. Talk about it. Write about it. Put it into song. Show the countries being abused in the name of keeping order are just the pawns in a capitalist game, the American and British disorder. There you go. Silence.
Silence. Yeah, I say the same. I tell you, Chip, he's a real poet. I tell you, he's
very good. Very nice.
I heard a lot of them. They're really, really good.
And he went worldwide on Firehorse Network and yours too.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I mean, it's like when we talk about our sovereignty here and talk about our individual status, standing up for our own self and our families and their future, you know, there are plans afoot. All you got to do is read the UN Agenda 21. There are plans afoot that are so psychopathic that surely globally we should be getting together and booting these few elites out.
I agree. I'm with you, Sean, 100%. I know Ole is too, but on the more peaceful round on his part, having worked who I work for and knowing that they'll stop at nothing to take anyone looking for a peaceful solution out, I have to think of a more aggressive means. And you know, one of the means of aggression isn't violence; it's simply stopping commerce.
Yes,
because commerce is where it grows for them. If you stop commerce for them, it kicks them right between the legs.
Absolutely, I think that's the way. I mean, the biggest revolution that I'm finding happening here in Ireland, and it really is happening, guys, is you know, people are growing their own food. They're not going to the stupid markets for their supermarkets for their GM food, you know, poisoned grub. They're emptying their bank accounts for any other reason, but they don't need that monetary stuff anymore because we're self-sufficient. And that really is a form of revolution, that the banks and the feeding of these military complexes and the Vatican and all the rest of it, they just aren't going to cope with if we all do it. Silence again. God, that was worse than the poem.
No, well, I agree. I agree 100%. And you know, especially on the banking side, get your money out of those banks and don't keep it there, because they grow rich off of your daily deposits into those banks. I'm a firm believer in the bank of the B&B, bed and breakfast.
Perfect. You know, and helping each other out. I mean, you know, if they can print money at will, surely we can just print it ourselves and tell them to bugger off. I'm sure they'll come knocking.
You know, and especially with electronic commerce, they have things like the Bitcoin coming out, but Bitcoins had been so so infiltrated, you know, and, yeah. and given bad reputations. But there are means. Look, BRICS just opened up their own commerce as several countries trying to get away from the U.S. dollar and the petrodollar. There are ways, where commerce can be had and through barter systems or whatever without having to utilize, their mainstream systems.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, for many years, both in England, in the UK, and here in Ireland, there have been local economy trading schemes, which basically are bartering, sharing your gifts. But we still, you know, there's something that I will chuck into the mix. I don't know if either of you have heard of it, but Mike Montagna, he devised for, I think it was the Carter administration, and then on was also again put to the Reagan administration as well. Mathematically Perfected Economy, MPE. It's been ripped to bits by some of the best minds here in Ireland, and apart from the fact, the only flaw really is that a country needs to do it. In other words, they all need to get on board. The whole country needs to go for it, and that's the only flaw. Once gone for, it takes the usury out of the economy. Have you heard of that, guys? It, MPE?
You know, and I have to laugh because people here are getting like 1.5% on their savings right now. But if you go to South America, you're getting 18 to 24% on your savings. You know, so where's the justice in that?
Absolutely, and you know, you take usury away from this planet, and we've probably got not a bad place to live. There's no need for all those wars and backstabbing, double dealing, and all the shite that's going on.
Yeah, but there's the greed on behalf of those power mongers, the ones who live by power, and money is power to them. So, you know, that's the difficult issue to get over. I know Ole sees that when he sees these guys going in out of their limousines into the conferences. He probably had to grit his teeth.
Yeah, more money than sense, because it really is nonsense, some of the things they're up to. I've got some more questions from the chat room, guys. Any chance of me chucking them? And obviously, Chip, Ollie, if they're curveballs, just say no, or you don't want to answer it, or whatever.
Go for it.
Let's go for it. So Laurie is in the chat room, and she's asking a question. Does the guest know of Kathy O'Brien, who was held under MK Ultra? Kathy O'Brien's book is available and tells all about what she went through.
Yes, I know Kathy O'Brien.
And I know of her.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Uh-huh. Okay, right, that's fair enough on that one. The next question is, did he know, I'm presuming you, Chip, did you know or work with Ted Gunderson? After Gunderson's death rumours went around, he was a shill and a disinfo agent all along. Can he shed any light on that, just out of interest, if you know?
Ted Gunderson was a 30-year veteran of the FBI. You know, as a federal agent for 30 years, he had his loyalties. And if he thought that someone was presenting a danger to the general public and to the country, he would probably try to turn those into the authorities. Other than that, I knew him. I did one interview face to face with him. I met him once face to face in Daytona Beach. Did a video interview with him, and I did a series, I think, of 12 radio interviews. Other than that, look, this is the way it is, folks. You trust no one. You don't throw your ass out there, you know, and just give everything to everyone and trust that they're going to take care of you. You trust no one, and you deal with life as you can, but don't throw yourself into the arms of the unknown. That's the best information I can give you.
But isn't it sad, and a sad indictment on this planet, on this world, that's the situation we're in? Because do you know what? I mean, I've been a gullible fecker over the years, and I've been conned many times, and that's because I do trust, and I do think that further on down the line, us human beings need to trust one another, or else we're just not going to progress.
Well, relying on one another and trusting one another is completely different.
Okay.
You can draw a line on the reliance. Trust is something different, you know. I mean, you rely on someone to pick you up when you need to be picked up, but you don't tell your deepest secrets to someone who can in turn use those against you.
Okay. Yep. I see that. Ollie, have you any more questions for Chip now? Because
yeah, I would very much like to hear what you say about how William Colby died, why he died, the way, if you, in your understanding, and what was surrounding the whole thing, if that would be okay.
Well, when Bill died, I was being held in prison for treason, in federal prison. So I can't really get into it. I had written him a letter and asked him to write the foreword to Operation Red Rock. And by the way, folks, Operation Red Rock and the Tatum Chronicles are available at Amazon.com or on my website, ChipTatum.com. He was always a person, who was very strict whenever we'd fly over water. He'd always, you know, in military aircraft and so forth, he'd always be one to have his water wings close. I can't imagine him going out on a canoe, without his life vest on. Just can't imagine that. No way, Jose. Nor would I imagine him leaving his computer running and open in the house.
No, it's so obvious that he was taken out, and it was done in a very badly way, but or poorly, sloppy way. But the reason why he was taken out at that time, or was there a specific reason, do you think, or was it just that he knew too much of
things? He too was being called in to testify.
Yeah.
In federal court, yeah, he and before a Senate subcommittee, he was being called onto the carpet, and someone didn't want him talking about whatever it was he was being called in for.
How did you receive these news? Was that while you were in prison? You heard about it?
Yeah, that's my Nancy, my wife, had at the time had told me about it.
But being in the so-called business you were in, how did you receive these type of news? Was that part of the game, or with big, great sadness, or how did you?
I lived a good life, Holy. I did what I did, and I knew one day, you know, I'd pay for that. I don't excuse what I did in my life. And many things I wouldn't change. I may change one or two things, but many things I wouldn't change in my life. You just accept it and you go on with it. There will come my time. His time had come. Mm-hmm. There will come my time. When it comes, it comes. Nothing I can do about it. There will come your time.
It'll come when it comes to us all, won't it? Yeah.
That's right.
Guys, there's a question in the chat room from Jimmy. Going on from what we were talking about earlier about the drugs that were transported in the coolers, here's a question. How much of the drugs transported were for the Clintons?
I have no idea. I transported some up to Little Rock Air Force Base and was met by Clinton. We took some drugs and some money up to him and Jackson Stevens. But other than that, I have no idea how much.
Okay.
You know, he was part of the criminal enterprise. There was a whole enterprise of him, you know. And if you look, you'll see photos of him with Bush even before becoming president. It was just part of the what they call the enterprise. The enterprise is a statistic and part of federal court and part of federal court dealings. It existed. He was part of it, and there were hundreds of billions of dollars traded through the enterprise, including what hasn't been talked about much is one of the main reasons for the Iran-Contra. One of the main functions of getting those hostages released was getting yellow cake uranium into Iran during the embargo against Iran. You know, they didn't need weapons that we were giving them. They needed the uranium. And so we traded uranium. We did that through the British and out of a mine that the British had control of in Namibia, South Africa. Did it very secretly and never let it be known that that was done. Mm-hmm. And in court testimony, everyone knew something was being held back. And many of the investigators thought it was the drugs. The drugs are the drugs. You know, that's no big deal. The horrible thing would be all that uranium and weapons grade that could be put into weapons grade very quickly.
True,
into Iran. That was the big secret.
Yeah, that's
had not been let loose.
I mean, here we are in Ireland, and we're supposed to be a neutral country. My arse. But anyway, we're supposed to be a neutral country, and we have, lots of Irish people demonstrating at Shannon Airport, where the US military come in and refuel and all the rest of it. So basically, we are a refueling stop on to war, if you like. So neutrality disappears when that happens. But another thing that seems to happen, Chip, is that when many of the planes are regularly coming in, Limerick and Dublin and Waterford and Cork get hit by massive amounts of drugs.
So yeah, funny how that works, isn't it?
Mm. So it's a controlling mechanism.
Military aircraft are not normally checked. U.S. military aircraft are not normally checked by your customs or any other customs. We could fly in and out of countries without check. And if that was going to be someone who was going to check us, we would have a stash. You know, we don't always have $25,000 to $50,000 in black ops monies available for these customs inspectors or whoever if they were going to raise a stink about it. Or we had a we had two types of metals for him. We had silver. We had lead.
Very good. Very good. That just sounds to me like when I read the book, The Economic Hitman. That's why I mentioned it earlier. They go in to talk to a despot or somebody who's running a country and not in the, I suppose, Rothschild banking system. And they would be offered, a great big wadge of money in a lovely suitcase full of money, and you can be a lovely person for a long, long time. Or here's the bullet, take it. Which would you like? Quite a choice, really.
There's no choice for me.
And for most of them.
Can I go back in history a few decades back in time? You were involved, or you know about the so-called super bills thing. Would you mind telling a little about about that?
In 1973, I believe it was, Congress, U.S. Congress, voted that black ops monies for the CIA had to come through Congress for funding. So what they decided in the CIA was, hey, we can't tell them because they can't keep a secret for anything in the world, and they're right. So they found a friend in Iran in the name of the Shah of Iran. They sent him intaglio presses. They sent him, plates. They sent him, ink. They sent him paper. And he was making, what was called super bills, the $100 bills, for the United States, for our black operations. He would print them up and have them there for us whenever we needed them. We would fly more equipment in, we would fly more supplies in, fly the money out, and use that money worldwide for our black ops. And the only thing that was the same with those that could be told is that the serial numbers, would be duplicated somewhere, because we were printing in two different arenas. Unfortunately, when the Shah was booted out, I think that was, 78, 79, The presses remained there with all those supplies, and billions of dollars were printed up in super bills. And that's one thing that kept us for so many years from going into Iran, because the threat from the Ayatollah was, if you come in here, we're going to dump this money onto the market and it's going to destroy the U.S. dollar. And it would have. I mean, they had a shitload of supplies there. They had aircraft loads of supplies to print with, the Shah did. We never even imagined that we would lose him in Iran.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next one in the art gallery here, Pablo Escobar. Could you tell us a little bit about him? Pablo.
His brother's a good friend of mine. Matter of fact, when I lived in South America, I lived in his brother's, leased a house on a lake from his brother, Arjemiro Escobar. And the story is that Pablo Escobar was found out by triangulating when he made a call into his son. That's bull crap. Back in those days, the triangulation, especially in a third world country like Colombia, wasn't in effect. They couldn't get within a kilometer of where he was. the reason he knew where he was is his son was staying at his brother's house, and his brother turned him in. And his brother turned him in with the promise that he and his family would be able to keep many of the properties that Pablo had acquired through his enterprise. Pablo was one of the main suppliers of North for the cocaine into the North camps in Nicaragua. They would supply cocaine. They would supply finished product up there. They would also supply the paste called bazooka into the camps. And eventually, they wanted to do all their own. So they would be flying bundles of leaves up into the camps and work it from there. Work it from raw product to finished product.
Okay.
Now Pablo had millions and hundreds of millions of dollars in Panamanian bank, and a lot of that money was swapped out for counterfeit and the real money taken out by Bush and the boys, and hundreds of millions of dollars of fake money was sitting in the Bank of Panama, National Bank of Panama, that needed to be gotten out of. Thus, the raid, when we raided Panama in Operation Just Cause, we were able to pull all that fake money, all the money. We took all the U.S. dollars out of Panama and replenished monies back into them from the treasury.
Manuel Noriega
was just a partnership gone bad. He had all that money sitting there, and he wanted a little more of the cut on the enterprise. He was taking a little more than his share, and so they took him out. Look, we were flying tons of the stuff to Manuel Noriega in Panama. Why would he even put 350 kilos on a sailboat and send it to the United States? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life, and that's what he was charged with.
Yeah.
Chip, if I can come in here, all this information you have, and it is unbelievable, you know, you've had one incredible life and then being done for treason or going into court. Surely this information that comes out, would that not lead on to the arrests of many, many people at the top?
Well, you know, the one thing that they ensure is that, you know, you control two things. First of all, you have to control the judges, and second of all, you have to control the police. You control those two entities, and nothing's going to happen. That's exactly how Chavez was so successful in Venezuela. Is when he got elected, he took out all of the judges, he took out all of the police heads, and took out the military heads and put his own people in. And from that day on, he controlled Venezuela and would still be controlling today had he not died. Now his predecessor, having a little harder time because he doesn't have the charisma that Chavez had, but still those entities are in place and all being controlled. You control those, you control it all.
Okay, well, you know, Kissinger said, you know, control the oil, etc., and economies, and you control nations, control the food, and you control the people. So that's quite interesting that we went down that route. But here in Ireland, so what you're saying is, because, you know, thanks for giving us an idea and a solution. So we need to take out our military, we need to take out our police force and judges.
You know, you work with the judges to begin with. I don't know if they're elected there or they're appointed. But if they're elected, you can take them out pretty quick. The police force, they're appointed, and they're, you know, so you need to make those police feel that they need to work. They're working for the people rather than for the cabals.
Absolutely, work under their oath. I mean, there was a good friend of mine, Terry, who stood at a here. They've actually got police Garda, they call them, on Garda Síochána is the police force over here. Or the police, I hate using the word force, actually, they shouldn't be a force. And under their oath, they do work for the people, you know, under our constitution, they should be working for the people. But there they are outside homes while Irish Water are putting in smart meters that nobody wants. And anyone who, you know, there could be a bank robbery going on and getting away with it. But if you stand outside your home and try and stop Irish Water from putting in a smart meter, you get 20 or 30 policemen around you. Stopping you from stopping them. So it's very, very strange what's going on.
It was interesting in Ecuador what they did is because the police were so corrupt and what they were doing was people got these groups got together and got scanners and they had their little motor scooters and motorcycles and one guy on the front, one guy on the back, and they would get a scanner, a call where someone was pulled over or someone was arrested and there was a big scam going on. They'd get the guy on the back would have a gun. They'd go up, they'd shoot the police and they'd leave. After a while, the police finally started leaving the people alone. So, you know.
Sounds a bit drastic, but obviously
but that's what they felt they had to do, and it worked. Yeah. Drastic, but it worked.
Yeah.
I'm not telling people to go out and do that. This is a historical operation.
Understood, and you've been talking about other historical operations that are just as drastic and just as mad.
I think this is the most difficult question of them all. I mean, how to deal with this? How do you deal with violent people like this? Because many times it seems like violence is the only language they will understand. What's your take on that, Chip?
My take is you stop commerce. Because commerce is what makes them grow. You know, you stop commerce, you take them out. You take it out at the lower government level because you stop tractor trailers from delivering food in and everything else. People are going to start pointing their fingers at the local government, going to start pointing their fingers at the police, going to start pointing their fingers. Look at what the black community in, Kansas or Missouri has done outside of Kansas City. They've gotten a lot of attention out of this murder of this young boy, you know. Whether he was at fault or not, a man with his hands in the air should not be shot. I don't give a shit what anyone says.
Exactly.
And he, you know, they took it to the streets and they're getting results.
Mm. Well, do you know, 120,000 to 150,000 reportedly took to the streets only last weekend here in Ireland about the Irish water and on what's going on. And so it is commerce. You're absolutely right. That was about paying a water charge. We are not going to pay them. And the Irish people have said they won't. And we are returning to sender any bills, any forms, anything that comes from Irish Water straight back to them. And I think they're shitting themselves, actually, that we're actually standing up at last.
Mm-hmm. And once that starts happening, they'll start realigning and relooking. Look, whenever we would neutralize someone, if we didn't get the result we expected, it took a lot of work for us to get another op in place to do something else to get that timeline going back to where we hope to get it. So anything you can do to disrupt their timing and any result other than what one would assume that they get out of it, any disruption can help. Disrupt, disrupt, disrupt. It doesn't have to be a violent disrupt. You can take a bunch of tires, put them on fire, and put them across the interstate, you know? It's going to disrupt things.
Well, that's a relative... I would actually call that a violent act, Chip.
What? Fire tires on the interstate?
Yeah, I would.
It's common. Students do it all the time in South America. They're called bloqueos. Okay. And they'll just stop commerce and they'll tell the police ahead of time they're going to stop commerce and they all go for it.
Yeah, no, that sounds good to me. And, I just think that there are ways maybe we should just, you know, like, for example, if the water is being fluoridated and poisoned and medicated over here and you know, even Harvard studies say that Irish water is, having that done to it, then, you know, every single one of us take the government to court. I mean, just fill the courtrooms every day with individuals saying my home is being poisoned by this person.
Yeah, they'll just build bigger courtrooms for you.
maybe so. So, Ollie,
until you actually stop commerce, that's what I'm getting at. And you don't want to do it with your body. You don't want to go sit out in the middle of the road because some crazy idiot's going to try to drive through you. that's what the students found that early in Venezuela when they were doing it down there. And that's why they were so successful with just, you know, they'd have a truck full of tires and rocks and they just put them in the road. That way their bodies weren't exposed to any anything like that. So,
but surely the cleanup campaign for that is very, very easy. I mean, here, if we did that, you know, they just send the fire brigade in and it would be gone in 5 minutes.
Wouldn't necessarily be done in 5 minutes. I don't mean just in one place. I mean, it's an organized effort. You know, it goes across the country. Those fire brigades were kept real ass busy.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Do you hear that, guys out there? If you're listening in.
Do you know in Belgium, when there was this massive scandal with the pedophile gangs connected into the government and so on, what the farmers did, what they came with their tractors and big heaps of manure.